Our first stop, Kakadu in the Northern Territory, where they've been hunting for a little yellow bird.
We were around this way yesterday. That's that very top section you can see.
Yep.
So yeah, so what we'll do, we'll go back around to the right today and head back towards Rachel.
Senior Parks Ranger Khan Spokes is leading the way as we go in search of a little yellow bird, once common but now very rare in the Northern Territory's top end. Hello, I'm Lisa Herbert. This time of year, the vast flat floodplains of Kakadu National Park are dry. There's the odd turtle skeleton lying on the ground. The grass and the few low shrubs I can see are all brown and crispy. It certainly doesn't look like a birdwatcher's paradise. But, as they say, looks can be deceiving. And if we're lucky today, we will find evidence of the endangered yellow chat.
Mind if we walk over there?
I'm joined on my very first bird survey by experienced Brisbane-based ornithologist Chris Sanderson. He and a team of volunteer bird watchers have been here all week surveying the park.
So we call it pishing, and basically it sort of simulates an alarm call for small birds. So often what will happen if you do it is the little birds will come out of their hiding place and check you out. You've got to use it sparingly. You don't use it when there's a bird of prey that eats other birds that's circling around, because you might put the birds in danger. But it's a useful little trick that you can use to get a look at these small birds.
Chris, what have you spotted?
Some potential habitat. We've got a bit of residual water in the landscape, and looks like some complex vegetation rather than just the flat grassland, so it could be good for the chats.
We're hoping that when we approach these habitat types, we actually flush the birds up into the higher points in the vegetation.
And the vegetation's only chest height, max.
Yeah, and that's the most we're going to get today. Anything higher than this will be trees, and that means we're not in the right spot. So we're absolutely trying to focus on these spots that have patches of sesbania in amongst the floodplain grassland areas.
Describe this sesbania. It's a shrub?
Yeah, sesbania is this annual plant that gets knocked down when the rains come, and then it grows back up as the wetlands start to dry out, and it provides a bit of cover for the birds to hide in when predators come after them.
These yellow chats, why are they important?
Well, they're a native animal and they're beautiful. That shouldn't be the only reason that we can serve things. There are plenty of things that aren't beautiful that are also worthy of our attention. But in this case, it's a species or a subspecies that's only found in the Northern Territory. They're a fairly iconic bird for the Kakadu area and for the people of the Northern Territory. And they're in serious trouble. You know, they've gone from being a species that was common on the floodplains to something that we're now having to actively look for to even find one or two of them. So if we can understand where they're still occurring, we can actually target some management actions like culling pigs and things like that to hopefully help them out.
When was the last time that these birds were spotted, and in what quantities?
There was a survey like this last year as part of Kakadu Bird Week, and they actually found, I think it was about 27 birds, and that was the first time they'd been seen for some time, at least in an official survey context. Hopefully the parks managers have been running into them from time to time, but it's not really their job to have to look for this stuff at the moment. We're out here trying to do some formal surveys, and if we can get some good numbers for them, then they know where to look for them in future and to look after them.
Good numbers, what are they?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, you know, in other parts of their range, and for other subspecies, good numbers would be flocks of 400. You know, out here with an endangered subspecies, finding any is a good start.
So Chris, after 1.5 hours of travelling, we finally got to a spot. We're walking back to the vehicle with, no excitement.
Oh, look, that's fine. You know, we're going to get a lot of zero records in this exercise. That's part of the point. They're a rare bird. If they were everywhere, we wouldn't be surveying for them. This wasn't really appropriate habitat, but we needed to check it out just to make sure that they weren't here. We'll move on, and hopefully they'll be at the next spot.
It's not all sunshine, birds and rainbows on this bird spotting expedition. Ranger Khan Spokes is here with us as well, driving the vehicle. And you've got a rifle over your arm. Tell us what that's for.
Just a bit of public safety. Make sure you guys are all safe. There's this time of year, plenty of pigs and buffalo all congregating around the water. Same as the area we're looking, so it's a bit more of a safety issue.
So pigs and buffalo won't run away if they see us?
Pigs generally will unless they feel cornered. Buffalo, personalities, some will, some won't. Some will want to hang on to what they've got. It is that time of year where it's hot and any bit of water is worth hanging on to. So.
Obviously we're trying to find those water points to spot some of these birds, but I can't imagine these feral animals help those birds' habitat whatsoever.
No, the pig damages are quite severe in a lot of areas, and the buffalo's same thing, wallowing in the areas and turning it all over. That affects the ecosystem, the turtles, the insects, and the insects are what the birds are after, so yeah, it all has a ripple effect.
Well, Ranger Khan, let's hope you don't use that rifle.
It'd be nice not to.
It's a big hole you just missed.
One of the hazards of looking for birds at the same time is driving through difficult terrain.
Extra degree of difficulty.
Oh, is that one?
Yeah.
All right, things just got exciting.
Yeah, so we've just flushed a young male yellow chat. This is the whole reason we're here. And it's very exciting to find one. Yeah, they're an endangered species, so it's pretty good to find one at all.
You know what? There's definitely more chats
down that way.
Yeah, I've got one now. Yours might be. It does look pretty yellow.
Yep.
I reckon we've got another few further on. So this is obviously the spot.
Chris, there's a big smile on your face, and I just heard you say, "I'm so stoked."
Absolutely. Look, you know, we've now found another group. I think it counts up to five. So you know, this is a pretty good result for us.
Were you expecting it in this location?
I guess my knowledge of chats is that this is the kind of stuff they're in, but I mean, anyone who was coming here for the first time who didn't know what they were all about would absolutely look at this and go, why is there anything here? There just doesn't look like there's anything for them.
You've been looking at the GPS since we left pretty much this morning. What's its role and why log where this bird is?
So with the GPS, we've got the sightings from last year on to come and check out those sites again to see if they're still here, and this is one of those spots, so it's really good news for us that they're still at one of the sites that they were found at last year. But we're also using an Android tablet with CyberTracker loaded on it, and we've got a form that lets us fill in all of the data that we're wanting to collect, lets us be a bit systematic, make sure we're collecting the same data each year so we can compare trends over time.
What data are you looking at?
So a little bit about the habitat, you know, whether there's Sesbania present and...
The elusive Sesbania, this low-growing shrub.
That's right. And there is a little bit here. It's mostly dead. There's a few short thickets of it growing back up, obviously just enough to keep the chats happy.
So where to now? We've spotted a few. We're going to walk towards further into the habitat.
Yeah, well, I've seen a few sentinel birds that are sort of keeping their eyes on us, but I reckon if we walk over to this lot, there might be more than the three that I've seen so far. So we just need an accurate count now.
So sentinel birds, they're the ones who obviously just keep watch. They're the security guards.
That's right. Any small bird that lives in a flock tends to have at least one bird that it takes its turn to keep its eye out to see if something's coming that could potentially harm them. So they'll take it in turns, but there's always one keeping an eye out.
I can hear some black kites above. Is that of concern to them?
Look, black kites, probably not. There are a lot of birds of prey. I mean, you've seen today we've looked at hobbies trying to catch cisticolas, and there's been some black-shouldered kites flying around. There's a number of birds of prey out here that would happily eat a yellow chat if they could get their claws on it.
And what about cats? Feral cats are obviously an issue right across Australia. Are they here?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, Khan over there managed to shoot one yesterday that was actually stalking some birds while they were watching. So cats are a huge issue out here. You know, obviously with the birds of prey, this is something that these birds have evolved to cope with over many, many millions of years, whereas the cats are something that they've only just started dealing with for the first time, and they're very bad at detecting them and avoiding them. So cats are a big issue, and you know, hopefully eventually we'll come up with a good way of dealing with them.
Let's go find some more yellow chats.
All right, seven.
So Ranger Khan, do you get a finder's fee? Seven so far?
That'd be nice, but that's just a joy to see them. I mean, a lot of our work isn't involved in environmental stuff as doing research. So the opportunity to come out and see these. I've been here over 4 years now. It's the first chance I've had to come out and do this. So that's a buzz.
Is this the first yellow chat you've seen?
It is, absolutely. Well, the first one I know of. I may have seen them previously and just not known a thing about them, but it's a real buzz to see them. There's been a lot of kilometres put in to find them so far, and to come up with 7 in one patch is brilliant.
A successful end to a week of bird spotting in Kakadu National Park, Senior Ranger Khan Spokes ending that report from our new resident rural twitcher, Lisa Herbert. Still to come on this special summer edition of A Country Breakfast, a camel farm on Queensland's Sunshine Coast taps into the lucrative camel milk market, and four-legged weed controllers prove to be a success in the Bega Valley.
My name is Elizabeth Larson. I'm the owner of a business called Herds for Hire, and we rent out our herd of goats to people that would like to get rid of weeds, fire hazards, or other vegetation that they don't want.
They're particularly partial to blackberries, but any weed will do. Hello, I'm Josh Becker in the Bega Valley in southern New South Wales, where these four-legged weed controllers are hard at work.
This is Lily Moon. She's one of the four females that we have.
Herds for Hire have been operating for the past 4 years, contracting out to landholders, local councils and the Rural Fire Service. Basically anyone who's got a weed problem they need to get under control.
This is Goofy.
At the moment we are at the Pambula Wetlands, and we have our 30 goats in front of us, and they are confined with our electric fence, and they all work on weeds, fireweed and blackberry at the moment.
Yes, and if we look at this section that's been roped off here, we can see plenty of blackberries, and they're enjoying it. They actually seek the blackberries out, don't they?
Yeah, they love blackberry. If they see a blackberry leaf, they'll run for it. Yeah, it's wonderful to watch. They work together. If there's a big bush, they will stand in a row and push the blackberry down, and the others will reach up, and it's just wonderful to watch how they work together to get to that beautiful blackberry leaf. But they can eat also soft blackberry stalks, which is sort of fascinating, which is very, very spiky stuff.
You've been running this operation for 4 years now. Who are the kind of people that often require this service and think about getting goats in to tackle weeds and to clear some scrub on their land?
Anybody who's a landowner would use our service. Private property owners in Bega Valley, there's many people who owns big properties, and they need our service. But we've also worked for the council a fair bit, and the Rural Fire Service as well. And as time goes by, people learn about what we can do. New people understand that we have a potential to help them.
And what can goats do that provide a different kind of service than other ways of tackling weeds or clearing?
The goats have unique talents in that they can access hard-to-reach areas. They can climb the rocky cliffs, and they go into steep gullies. They also are browsers. They're not grass specialists, which means that they can eat a great variety of feedstuff. So in many, many cases, it's much less expensive to use a herd of goats instead of using machinery, and it's also safer.
One thing that people will know about goats is that they're often tough to contain. For this operation, it involves, you know, the ability to move the fencing. Can you describe the solution that you've come up with here and your experience that you've had and how you've had to train the goats?
Yeah, everybody knows goats are hard to contain, so we had to find a way to solve that problem, and we have. It's a mobile fence. It consists of 50 meter length, and we can roll it up and we can set it up exactly the way we want it. And it's electrified. It's quite strongly electrified, and the goats are bright animals, and they once they're zapped by it once or twice, they respect it. And of course you have the odd animal who doesn't get used to it, and we realise we can't use that animal, we just give that animal away for another job.
What do you enjoy about the process of this job? I mean, yeah, it's a pretty nice thing to be out in the Pambula wetlands on a nice day, you know, just keeping an eye on the goats who are doing all the work.
What is there not to enjoy? I mean, it's the most pleasant job you can imagine. And now that we've had such a beautiful herd, I can literally now take the fence down and then walk over, you know, a kilometer that way, set it up, and they'll just follow me. And all I need to do is call, "Boys!" I find very satisfying. They come running after me. It's just the most wonderful thing. And I'm not, and I have to say, when we've been working around the place, particularly in a town centre such as Biga, the public support is overwhelming. You know, people stop and say they think this is a fabulous solution. We did a job along the Biga River last year, where we did a fire hazard reduction. Because it was so close to houses, there was no other way of doing it. And everybody that walked past stopped and said they thought this was a great idea. So that's also very satisfying, I'd say.
That's a handsome goat, so we call him Paul Newman.
And that's Spike. There's Spike and Milligan.
Bring the babies out and we'll let you out. You coming? Come on, babies. Fedora, we're not hurting them.
It's a busy morning here at the dairy near Caloundra on Queensland's Sunshine Coast, but it's not just any old dairy. That sound you can hear behind me, that's actually a camel. That's right, this is a camel milk dairy. No cows to be seen here. G'day, I'm Marty McCarthy, and it's not often you see these magnificent animals being milked. And just wait until you hear how much a litre of this stuff is fetching. Camel farmer Lauren Brisbane is here to show me around her unique dairy.
Well, we're milking camels. So what we do is they come into the race and then we wash them really thoroughly and make sure their udder's lovely and clean. And then we make sure that they've let down. So we get a little bit of milk out of them to make sure that their udder's nice and healthy. And then we put the cups on them.
Take me back a step, because as you say, milking camels, that's not really an idea that a lot of consumers or lovers of milk would be used to.
No, it's something quite different in Australia. Of course, it's been consumed for thousands of years, but it is quite new in Australia. Camel milk is a really high in health product. So it's used for children with autism. It's the only dairy that's recommended for children with autism. And it's also used for diabetics and people with gastrointestinal problems, you know, gut dysfunction. So very high in health product.
You're one of the few camel milk dairies in the country. Has there been an interest in what you're doing here?
There's been a lot of interest and we get a lot of emails from people who say, you know, we heard about what you're doing, we'd really like to do it too, so can we come and have a look at your dairy? And we get those sort of requests all the time.
Lauren sells out of milk every week and it fetches as much as $32 a litre.
The reason why it's so high is because it's so expensive to actually produce. Our production costs are enormous. It's not like a cattle dairy, you know, where you've got hundreds of cows and you don't have to look after the babies. Our babies stay on their mothers, so the production costs for a start are double, and we have very specialised feed as well. So the costs in producing the milk are extremely high.
It's an animal that's largely seen as a pest here in Australia. Camels were first introduced in the 1840s to help explorers traverse inland Australia. But as they became wild, the population exploded. And after culls in recent years, the number now hovers around the 300,000 head mark. But despite their pest status here, Lauren says they are worthy of livestock status too.
Camels have been milked for thousands of years in the Middle East and North Africa, but Australia was very new. They're a different animal. So the challenges were, you know, how do we do with this with such a large animal and an animal that's largely been allowed to be wild or only managed behind wire.
And what about the logistics of actually milking the camels? I notice when you bring the mums through, you have to have the babies in a separate channel on the side. And the babies are there still drinking some milk while you're trying to get milk to collect on the other side. So are the babies drinking your profits?
Well, we share the milk with the babies. The camel cows are here primarily because they're mothers, so their priority in life is their babies, so their babies have to be our priority as well. So it's really important that we make sure that the babies are growing really well and really healthy. So that's why camel cows only produce sort of 4 or 5 litres at the very most a day.
And a big
From the founder of Apple to comedian Andy Samberg, from the head of Netflix to the man who built the World Wide Web, from the creators of the record-breaking podcast Serial to startups that are breaking ground right here in Australia. If you want to hear from the movers and the shakers, media, technology and culture around Australia and the globe, there is literally one show. It also happens to be the most literally named show. Download this show with me, Mark Fennell. Media, technology, culture. Find it on the RN website now or on the ABC Radio app.